Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon, and got the pleasure of being joined next by Laverne Beyer, who's a bear expert, I guess it's fair to say, and is going to be doing a talk tonight, a couple of talks tonight, at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center on goby bears. And the title of that is Goby Bears Pursuing the Most Endangered Bears on the Planet. Laverne, thanks for coming in. Good to meet you. Pull that mic in a little bit closer to you there. And first of all, just let me know a little bit about, we were just kind of getting into it and talking about it, why you were called to go into the Gobi Desert and start working with these bears.
Yeah. I had a career with Fish and Game for 43 years, and during that time period, I did brown bear research and captured over 1,000 bears. During that time, I had invented different contraptions to collect the DNA from one bear at a time. And
when you're collecting DNA, is that what sort of sample are you taking? Is that part of the invention in a way, or
most after O.J. Simpson in the 1990s? Mm-hmm. Okay, it became fashionable to do DNA work on wildlife. So, in the bear researchers were they noticed that hair from bears was getting snagged by barbed wire fences. You know, in lower 48.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so then bear biologists started stringing up barbed wire across trails on rub trees to collect hair for DNA. And you needed follicles. During that time period, my recollection was you needed three good hairs, good follicles. Can't be dead hair.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Boy, that seems pretty extreme to be stringing up barbed wire to.
Well, they're losing their hair. They're losing their life.
Okay. All right.
Right?
Okay.
You're just pulling the hair like your dog.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. And
they're tough. They can take it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so I happened to be working with some big brain physiologists up on the Kenai Peninsula. I was foot snaring bears for them. And they were telling me the issues with the barbed wire because with the barbed wire, with multiple catch hair traps, as far as DNA, you have mixed sampling. So the cost goes up with mixed sampling. You don't know who is who. So you have lots of bears going through the same barbed wire on a trail or on a, mm-hmm. on a rub tree. Well, and during that time period, my recollection was like $75 per sample to have it analyzed. All right, so you have different issues going on. So, but you know, for some of us, we wanted to use the hair DNA sampling as a method to do population estimates. You know, so they were telling me, they're big brains, that someone needs to come up with a single catch hair trap device to catch the hair from one bear at a time, to eliminate a lot of those other issues, the cost, you know, the mixed sampling. So at the time, we were working on Northeast Chichagof around Huna, okay? And so we spent a lot of time in the Huna landfill,
mm-hmm.
okay? So that became my lab, all right? So lots of bears coming and going, and I've always been an inventor type. So I invented lots of different contraptions, set them up. I could sit in my truck, watch the bears coming and going, look at my contraptions, go tweak them. You know, and I had done a lot of trapping other species or a lot of capturing of other species in Southeast Alaska. You know, so I kind of brought those other abilities there to how to trap hair.
Mm-hmm.
It seems kind of silly how to trap hair, but one bear at a time. But it has to be – but there was different criteria too. Had to have usable hair. You had to have at least three hairs, usable hair. You had to have something that was cost-effective, a hair trap that was cost-effective. And then we were thinking too that, okay, we want to be able to carry 100 of these things, one person, kind of, you know, and then something that the bears would not avoid. That's a big issue. You can't have something mm-hmm. that avoids something. Then something user-friendly. So I can hand it over to Andy here,
right.
Andy here, go knock yourself out.
Go set these up, yeah.
You know, go set these up. You know, so that was kind of criteria. Well, I had different contraptions, you know, one of the, you know, contraptions I had, mouse traps, rat traps, you know, different devices on them, brushes, mm-hmm. barbed wire. Here in Alaska, barbed wire is difficult to get. I happen to have a lady friend in Arkansas. I said at the time, I said, you got barbed wire, send me some barbed wire. You're not going to go to Don Abel's to get barbed wire. Send me, you know, as it turned out, the barbed wire she sent was perfect because not any barbed wire would have worked.
Hmm.
You know, so then everyone that was using barbed wire. So, and I had done a lot of wolf trapping in the past, live trapping and control. So one of the methods we used to use for wolf trapping was a neck snare. Or, you know, so I had some wolf neck snares. So I cut the angle iron off on the wolf. If anyone knows how snares work, I cut the angle iron off, replaced it with inner tube, and then incorporated barbed wire and some brushes inside the loop, you know, hanging on bear trails. Plus, I had rat traps with brushes. You know, bears come – had a trip wire. Bears come down a trail, and then they hit the trip wire, and then a rat trap would go off and, you know, and rake across the bear's back, right, and get hair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the rat traps and the brushes were catching too much hair. They were catching too much hair because – plus, they were expensive. But, you know, the brushes were like, you know, $2 to $5 a piece. And then the rat trap, I couldn't carry 100 of them, you know, because once you use these devices, if you want to have, you want to be able to reuse them again. So you have to burn all the hair off to eliminate that DNA. Well, with the brushes, you'd wreck the brushes by the time you burn them off. Well, with the barbed wire, we discovered that it wasn't the barbs that captured the hair. It was the end, because that barbed wire that I got, the ends worked like tweezers, so it would actually kind of pinch and pull.
Oh, I see.
And pull hair off, you know, so it ended up being the perfect barbed wire, you know. So then it didn't take me long, probably less than a week, to figure out that the snares were going to be the unit of the device of choice. Friendly. I found a place in Iowa that can make them for $1.50 a piece. I could carry 100 of them. They met all the criteria.
Yeah. So you've developed this device, and then that got the attention of people who are working with this one very specific population of bears, and those are the Gobi Desert bears.
This is
– long story short, in other words.
All, yeah, right. This is all well published.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is all well published.
Yeah.
So the Gobi Bear Project, because of their challenges – they needed a single catch hair device. Ultimately, though, when I got the call, they didn't tell me. I learned more and more as the days went by, really what the challenge was. Mm. But it was all pro bono. It was fine. You know, it was all pro bono. It was an epic adventure, you know. And but every day I learned more and more really what the challenge was, you know. And then the environment was a big part of the challenge, you know, the landscape, you know, for – so that was a big part.
Yeah, from working in the Tongass to working in the Gobi Desert, well, must be radically different.
That's why you have to come to my talk, because
okay.
I could just about couldn't wrap my head around it, because here I am. I've worked in the wettest climate with the highest brown bird population on the planet, going to the Gobi Desert, the driest and the most endangered population on the planet. And the landscape couldn't be more extreme.
Now, when we're talking about an endangered population, how many individuals? Do you have an estimate of how many individuals there are?
I don't know if I want to be a spoiler.
Oh,
but,
well.
I probably should. For those shut-ins, I probably should.
Generally, or however you want to reveal it, yeah.
For the shut-ins, I'll be the estimate is 22 to 40.
So critically endangered,
yes,
especially
exactly.
For a large animal.
I felt incredibly privileged and honored that Gobi Bear Project reached out to me, that I had something to contribute.
Yeah. Are they a very similar – how would you describe them to describe a Gobi Desert bear?
It's a subspecies of brown bear.
Okay.
Gobinensis. You're not on the internet. There's not a whole lot. You know, and even traveling with the Gobi Bear Project, well, I learned more and more every day. You know, there was a huge, you know, our core group is 10 people, huge language barriers. Only a couple people spoke a little bit of English, you know, missed a lot, you know, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know what's around the next bend,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and my colleague, we're in different vehicles, you know, we're in Russian vans, different vehicles. Miss a lot, you know, and then even he and I don't have many opportunities to discuss kind of things, you know. So every day I kind of learn more and more. And plus, for him, we'll say Harry Reynolds, he's the project leader. He's got lots going on, you know. So, you know, and I don't know. What did you ask?
Well, I was just asking about the bears themselves, but then I wanted to ask next about the terrain. When you think about setting up snares in the terrain that you were in here in Southeast Alaska versus trying to set them up there, it's night and day.
Like setting up a snare out here in Eagan.
Right.
Well, practically.
Right.
Oh, no.
And that must be an issue because the bear's obviously going to notice it a lot easier, those kinds of things, I would think.
I had to rethink everything. You know, you're asking about the bear. Okay, the bear, and then things I learned about the bears themselves. Okay, they're not meat eaters. They're pretty much nocturnal. It's rare to see them in the daylight. Any photo you ever see of a goby bear, it's probably from a trail camera or when a bear is released from capture. There's only ever been 25 goby bears ever captured. Never been one in captivity. You know, we captured 3 while we were there. One was a female, 108 pounds, with a cub. That's full grown.
So, okay. Much smaller, yeah. Smaller than a black bear.
They don't
eat
meat. They don't even know what meat is. Hmm. That was an issue for me. I mean, I didn't know all this, understand some of the behavior. They couldn't tell me what their bait was that they're catching them with. They didn't know. Uh-huh. And that's part of my talk. We caught a male, which was the heaviest bear ever been recorded, 260 pounds. But they don't eat meat. This is the reason they're crashing is because of climate change. They're more victims of climate change. You know, they're viewed as an umbrella species in Mongolia. There's 6 species that are endangered. Goby bears are viewed as an umbrella species. Their plants are going away, essentially. And their primary foods are wild rhubarb and wild onion roots. While we were there, we saw none of it. Mm. You know, and in the Great Gobi Desert or in the strictly protected areas, kind of like a park, this park where the Gobi bears, right down by China. We could look in China in some places. And the strictly protected area is 3 little mountains about the size of Vermont and New Hampshire. And there's oases there, puddles of water, maybe the size of the hood of your car. Okay. Everything comes to drink there.
Is it just a spring or something like
that? Exactly, yeah, spring. Right. Everything from birds to camels drink at that spring. Plus, there's 20 alternative feeding stations. They've created a pellet out of dog food and vodka remnants to create a pellet.
So the grain that's left over from when they're distilling, yeah. Right.
Exactly. You know, and so they have 20 feeders in oases, you know, kind of associated with these oasis springs, you know, and the springs are all shrinking kind of thing, you know, and it was something to wrap my head around all this.
Yeah, something completely different.
And then trees. I mean.
Yeah, no trees.
It was a
yeah.
long time before I saw a freaking tree. I tree, I couldn't believe it.
right. Wow. Well, it sounds like an absolutely fascinating discussion, something that maybe people like myself included just have never even heard of, this population of bears in the Gobi Desert. The title, again, of the talk is Gobi Bears Pursuing the Most Endangered Bears on the Planet. Laverne Beyer is going to be doing 2 lectures tonight at the Fireside Lecture Series over at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. 6:30 is the first one and 8 o'clock is the second one. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Could I make a plug?
Absolutely.
Just because visually it's for me, I mean, I think for anyone it's so epic, is I've created a little 23-minute pictorial chronicle that with Mongolian music that I'm going to run like about from 6:05 to 6:30-ish, and then I'll run it again from 7:30 to 8, you know, for any early arrivals. So, because in my presentation, I can only have so many images, and even the way it is, my program may be a little long, so I'll have to whiz through it.
Well, it sounds good. Laverne, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know about it. Good luck with the talks tonight. I'm sure they're going to be fascinating. You don't need the luck at all. It's going to be absolutely fascinating. Laverne Beyer, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it and have a great talk.
Right.
That's happening tonight at 6:30 and 8 o'clock. It's out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Go check it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.